will flourish by the sweat of our labour, the strength of our will and the force of our minds. Forget the old battles, those days are over. Hatred corrupts and friendships refine.
Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the Clacks Women for Indie podcast. And the music there was Andrew Gordon playing a little bit on the after party of the Roundtable 1320 live streaming that went out on Saturday to celebrate the declaration of Arbroath. And if you haven't managed to catch the film that Leslie Riddick made on the declaration, definitely do so. It's doing the rounds on the internet. It's on our Facebook page. Fabulous little documentary, and really nice to see beautiful tapestry in it. And once we're able to leave the house, once this lockdown is over, definitely a trip I want to make this year to go and see that tapestry in the Abbey. Wonderful. So apart from that, what's going on? There's been a flurry of activity in the media from Douglas Alexander and others. Absolutely outraged that the NHS Louisa Jordan Hospital, which is the emergency hospital which the Scottish Government has set up in Glasgow as a precaution should it be needed, should in fact have been called the Nightingale Glasgow, because the original Nightingale Hospital is the emergency hospital that's been set up in England by NHS England. Now, what kind of self-loathing generates that kind of, you know, we must not celebrate anything Scottish? I just can't begin to imagine that kind of mentality. And we see it all over at the moment. People complaining about the word Scottish being in Scottish institutions or Scottish newspapers. It's cringeworthy. It's absolutely ridiculous. And despite coming from a military family, my dad was in the RAMC, hence my stupid army brat accent. Louisa Jordan was not somebody I'd ever heard of, so I have done a little bit of digging, and it's actually quite an interesting story. The Scottish Women's Hospitals for Foreign Services was founded in 1914. It was spearheaded by Dr. Elsie Ingalls, and it was established shortly after the outbreak of World War I as a voluntary all-woman unit. The Scottish Women's Hospitals offered opportunities for medical women who were prohibited from entry into the Royal Army Medical Corps, the RAMC, and provided nurses, doctors, ambulance drivers, cooks, orderlies. The headquarters were in Edinburgh throughout the war. Scottish Women's Hospitals serviced 14 medical units across Corsica, France, Malta, Romania, Russia, Salonika and Serbia. And within 7 months of mobilising, the Scottish Women's Hospital was servicing 1,000 beds with 250 staff, which included 19 female doctors. In 2015, Serbia had 4 primary hospitals working night and day. The conditions in Serbia were dire. The Serbian army had a mere 300 doctors to serve more than 500,000 men, as well as battle casualties. And the hospital also had to deal with a typhus epidemic, which ravaged the military and civilian populations. Both soldiers and civilians were half-starved and worn out, and in those conditions, diseases thrived and hundreds of thousands perished. Louisa Jordan was from Maryhill. She began a nursing career at the Quarriers' Homes in the Bridge of Weir Sanatorium. She'd worked at the Shots Fever Hospital, the Poor Law Hospital in Manchester, was a Victoria Jubilee nurse. She was a district nurse in Buckhaven, and she enlisted with the Scottish Women's Hospital and was deployed to Serbia. And initially she was treating war wounded soldiers, but following the typhus epidemic, she was placed in charge of the new typhus ward. And she'd volunteered to treat Dr. Elizabeth Ross, who was dying of typhus, but tragically, 4 Scottish Women's Hospital staff, Louisa Madge Fraser, Augusta Minshall and Bessie Sutherland, died during the epidemic. Louisa was 36 when she died and is buried in the military cemetery in Serbia and is remembered annually in Serbia along with the other nurses who served during the 1915 typhus epidemic. She's also commemorated in Scotland at the Buckhaven War Memorial and at Wilton Church in Glasgow. So a very fitting tribute, I think, to have Glasgow's emergency pandemic hospital named after Louisa Jordan. Now, why on earth anybody in Scotland or anywhere else could dispute that is just utterly disrespectful to Louisa's memory and, in my opinion, just shameful. Just shameful. Get a grip, Dougie Alexander. The other thing that's been going on that's a little bit confusing exactly what the true story is, but it's to do with procurement of respirators and tests. And first of all, we have Trump, who has acted like a pirate on the high seas and took charge of a whole load of test kits, I think, that were heading for Europe. And he did it by going direct to the company that was supplying them, offering them three times as much and payment up front. So, of course, they gave them to him instead, which is, you know, America first. You know, they're not... The idea of us having a trade deal with somebody like that, I mean, it's not going to be a trade deal. He's just going to take what he wants. The other point in that was that Westminster appear to have done the same thing to Wales, who had put in an order with a Swiss giant pharmaceutical company, Roche, for testing equipment. And apparently, but somehow that deal collapsed because a bigger order had come in from NHS England. So Roche had supplied the English order at the expense of the Welsh order. Mark Drakeford had said that Roche should have honoured the agreement to provide the 5,000 tests a day. We did have a deal. It was with Roche. We believe it was a deal that ought to have been honoured, he said. We now have access to supply of tests from a consortium. Adam Price asked for more information about it, and I think it got a bit rode back on as to exactly what had happened. But the upshot was they've now put in place a consortium for the four nations of the UK, and it appears that Public Health England is going to be doing the ordering for them. Now, that sends something of a shiver down my spine. Although at one of her press conferences, Nicola Sturgeon did directly deal with this point and she assured us, and I believe her, that yes, they have entered a consortium on the basis of the four nations because that gives them more purchasing power, but that is on top of anything that the Scottish Government is doing itself. So it's not that it's been that the power has been snatched. It does seem as if it has been on the basis of an agreement between the four nations, which, you know, is slightly better than the way it originally appeared. Although what happened at the outset in Wales does seem to have been deeply suspicious. But what it just reminded me of was that very eloquent explanation that I heard Philippa Whitford give at one of the public events that she was at. And it was to do with the power grab of the 20 powers that Westminster was grabbing from the devolved nations, one of which was procurement. And she explained really clearly why that was an issue. And I'm just going to play you that clip now of Philippa Whitford, because if this current arrangement did happen with the agreement of all four nations, fair enough. But you know, we're constantly at risk because of this power grab. Here's Dr. Philippa Whitford to explain it.
And one of the things that really concerns me is a power away down at the bottom of the list that people think is a bit technical and they don't really notice. And that's power over public procurement. So how services are bought, how contracts are put out to tender, and that would apply to our NHS. So having fought to protect our NHS as a single public entity delivered publicly, unlike in England, they would suddenly have the ability to say all public contracts have to be put out to tender. Now, we don't know if they will, but why would we be happy that they have the power to do that? Because that's what they did to their own NHS. The Health and Social Care Act, Section 75 of that, said all contracts that could technically be put out to tender had to be. And that was the law. Now, I've been fighting that while I've been down the road, and they're talking about maybe stepping back from it a bit. But it's still the law in England. So when six commissioning groups in Surrey tried to row back from this, now, they weren't breaking contracts with Virgin Care. The contracts had come to an end. But they recognised, you know, actually that wasn't really good. These community services weren't good enough. We want to take them back into the NHS. And what did Virgin do? They do what they always do. If they're not awarded a franchise, they sued them. Now, it's all very secret how much they paid to settle out of court. But one of the CCGs accidentally let loose that it was over 300,000 that they had had to pay. So with the six, you're talking over £2 million that went to Virgin for suing commissioners for wanting to take these Virgin Care services back under the NHS. That's £2 million that's not spent on hip replacements or drugs or modernising hospitals or anything else. And it's all these things that are pulling NHS England apart and fragmenting it. And it's not just NHS competing with private. NHS trusts are competing with each other. So it's very difficult to develop joined up pathways for patients. It's very confusing. And frankly, I'm not happy at the idea that the ultimate power over public procurement would now sit back in Westminster.
Well, quite right, Philippa. I'm not happy about it either. The other thing, just you'll have noted there the reference to Virgin. That'll be the same Virgin owned by billionaire Richard Branson, who's wanting the taxpayer to bail out Virgin Atlantic, even though his company's affairs are arranged in such a way that they pay minimum tax in the UK. If society does not profoundly change as a result of this experience with Corona 19, then I don't know what would make it. It's astonishing. Anyway, there we go. So next, none of us can leave the house, so I'm certainly missing my regular chats with our fellow women for Indy. And we, as you know from our previous podcast, we were out and about all over the place. But what we have been trying this week, trying to get a little bit better with the technology that's available to us, tried having a video conference so I could record some conversation for the podcast. Originally, we were going to do it on Zoom, but I've been reading some quite disturbing stuff in The Guardian recently about security on Zoom not being great. But here is just some topical highlights, and just to get a change of voice from listening to me all the time, I thought it would be quite nice to share some of Lorraine's thoughts. Lorraine has been an activist a lot longer than I have, and she goes way back to the 2014 campaign. And what she doesn't know about campaigning isn't worth knowing. So I hope you find some of her thoughts interesting and maybe even challenging.
Let the Scots be a nation that's proud of their heritage. We are eye to the future and a heart to forget. And let us be rid of those bigots and fools who will not let Scotland live and let live.
Who would have envisaged in January that we would all be stuck in our houses, unable to leave?
I know.
In April, this could go on for quite some time.
It really could. So it's good that we're finding out how this technology works, though, because...
Well, it's a good time as any, huh?
Absolutely, and this joins us all up for when we unleash it all on the world. Well, I'm just recording it on my phone.
They're really good, that's all I do. My phone's way. And where I saw the Zoom idea was to get away from all this doom and gloom. I watch American politics and all the American shows. I've been watching Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, Stephen Colbert, Trevor Noah, and they're all utilising this Zoom feature immensely. So listen, I'm really eager to use that, so we'll maybe do that maybe next week if you like.
Great idea. And the more of us we can get into the loop as well, it just means we can keep in touch.
I was going to say, if we get a few years to get Zoom, we could actually continue having meetings.
Yes, of course. So how is it? What's happening in Tullybody then? Are people staying in? Are they?
Well, I saw a post last night for this last that said I couldn't resist that I was missing my boyfriend, so he came to my habit, but he didn't touch nothing, and he only stayed for 30 minutes. And I couldn't resist that I touched him through my shoes with my toes or something like that. And then the day, she put up that she thinks she's got coronavirus and he works in a prison.
Oh, for God's sake.
Exactly. It's like, how stupid can you get? My other pal messaged me, she's getting very political. This is what I am noticing, Fiona. Hence why I'm upping the ante with my politicising. Damn pandemic research and day after it, just about every pandemic, because it changes demographics. There's usually been social revolutions or great social change right after global pandemics.
So oh, that's interesting.
There's going to be a new normal. I've been watching all these documentaries about the 1918 flu pandemic and the Black Plague, and just how obviously it would affect everybody who lived through it. And the Black Plague, it wiped out half the population of Europe.
Yeah.
So the farmers had no farm hands. So this meant that they wanted city dwellers and stuff to come and work in their. So this is when the first farmhands were able to negotiate a good wage, apparently.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then after the plague was kind of caught up with the war.
Well, and look at, you can just see at the moment, look who we're starting to realise the value of. It's not the people who make money, it's not the bankers, it's
exactly.
The people that take care of us, the people who are in the shops, the people who drive buses.
This is the world getting us ready, so I'm getting ready. When all this happened, and I'm like, right, come out of fortune mode, you have to go back into warrior mode, you need to survive.
Do you know, at least it's given us something creative to do while we're stuck in.
Yes, that's what I loved about these poetry things. They've really filled my days, and I've really enjoyed them since we started doing it. Absolute sad, though. I really must listen to Indie Live Radio at 1 o'clock on a Sunday now. I actually met the folk for Yes Kill when I was at Dunoon in February.
Did you?
I went up with a woman from the Sur Alba Pipe Band.
Uh-huh.
And we rose. We went down to the Yes Hub. It was lovely.
Well, see, I was thinking that if that Look About You cafe ever gets up and running, what we could do is have open mic night there and you can stream it. So,
well, that's happening, don't you worry.
Yeah, but you know, we could be streaming that into the hub and we could record it and podcast it as well. What about the declaration of our broth at the weekend? Is there anything you're going to be doing?
There's that online thing. I might get involved, Fiona. It depends, really. I'm getting the mood because I'm trying not to go on about independence too much right now. Trying to just point out things that's wrong, why it's wrong, why it's there. So I don't know if people will be ready for an in-your-face, but it's not about that. It's about for us to commemorate it some way. So I think as we know now that it's coming, us that's in the movement that's never gave up, we can see people how frustrated they are by how the Tories are running this. Mm. It's coming right now. It's nowhere near facing matter. This is some situation, but Nicola Sturgeon's, she's managing it fantastic, isn't she?
She absolutely is, and especially when you compare her with what we're getting from Matt Hancock and Boris Johnson,
exactly.
And that crew down the road. And they can't tell a straight story to save their lives. Down the road, they're saying, oh, a couple of weeks and it'll have peaked. And I was just listening to her today on the daily ScotGov broadcast that she does.
Uh-huh.
And she's going, well, I can't tell you it's going to be in a couple of weeks. And there's no point in me saying it'll be a couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think, well, actually, that's what I want. I want a realistic time frame that I can then prepare myself for, and if it's less than several months, bonus.
I'm going to just think to myself, it's going to be like this, not as bad, but at least to some degree for 12 weeks. That's what I'm telling myself.
Yeah.
That's June. So I'm just telling myself, it's not 12 weeks of being stuck in the house, it's 12 weeks of being safe, and I can go on with things that for long now have been overdue.
Yes.
Last year, great plans I was going to do in that garden. But then I got swept along in the independence train, you know, and you get swept in it and you're like, oh, this is happening. And then I'm like, my God, Lorraine, you've had that summer house a year. But it's true, Fiona, it's a chance to get catching up.
Yeah, I've been doing that. I've been getting like jobs that I've been putting off for years are getting done. And the garden, which is up, like you, I spent the last 2 years just running from one thing to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think, oh, I'll get around to it.
Oh, I must admit.
Oh, yeah, it was good fun. But it's funny because my calendar for March, I've got this wall calendar and I just scribble on what I'm doing. And the first 2 weeks are solid and the second 2 weeks are empty.
But it's a chance for us to get back to basics, to more self-aware and more aware of the world and what's going on around about us.
What's really interesting, though, is watching what's happening with this money is no object narrative that's coming out of the Tories, because that's the value of having your own currency. And that is almost the argument that being handed to us next time somebody says, what are you going to use for currency? You say, well, it doesn't matter what we use, because look what you can do when you've got one. You know, you can decide if you're going to just print money. This wiping out debts from the NHS. Well, why have they got debts in the first place? Because you privatised them and starved them with money.
As a public institution, how does that owe your government money? And then I was like, it's the equivalent to what you've wasted on Brexit.
Yeah. And that, when Theresa May told that, it was a nurse, wasn't it? There's no magic money tree. Yes, there is. It's called having your own currency.
Yes, but we're saying yes, there is, which we always knew that could shake it when the light. Now other people are gone, but it's too late. They're shaking that tree, but the lives are gone. The lives are dead. This is a sorry situation. See, about his herd immunity, they're all saying about him killing off the pensioners to pay less pensions. I believe that, because I also read an article somewhere in a financial institution who predicted that there'll never be booms and busts like there have been in the past, because your economies are that far advanced now, there isn't that room. But when the baby boomers start to die, there's that many of them that when their children get their legacies, they're predicting that there'll be a mini boom. So I'm wondering, part of me wonders, are they Tories? Because they'll be looking at all these things in a greater depth than us, you know what I mean? But it makes you wonder, herd immunity.
Well, I mean, the only thing is, the people that it would be killing off is largely the Tory voters.
Well, I know that's which, the plus side.
Always a silver lining.
I thought that too, but then a part of me checks herself and goes, oh, but that's a shame, they're people the same age as your mum and dad, who just never knew better.
So what do you think's going to happen with the fallout from the Alex Salmond trial? Because here's Nicola Sturgeon being lauded by people up and down the country going, oh, I wish she was our First Minister. The idea of the pair of them getting involved in some kind of...
He's disappeared. He seemed, what, his words were very wise when he said outside the court, my side will be heard, but it will not be this day.
Yeah.
What we're facing now is more important. God help us all. That man isn't about going out and scoring points off the SNP. Nicola Sturgeon, he was her mentor.
Mm.
I do think he's a legend, but he's also human and he's made mistakes. And committing adultery isn't a crime, but it's morally wrong. And it's, in my eyes, it's just his status to me, because I had him on a pedestal. That's the problem when they go into politics, that their personal life becomes dragged through the dirt. And in his case, he knew he was a sitting duck. It's sad that it seems to have came from within the SNP, but equally, it was all around about the same time as the Me Too movement. So clearly, if people have had issues with some of his gestures and some of his remarks being a bit creepish, that instigated or has whipped them into a frenzy, that's what I think. Not relevant to Scotland's fight at this moment, and I don't think Alex would want to damage the current status of the movement when it was for his efforts as well as everyone else's that got us to where we are.
It struck me that when the papers, who always think that SNP equals the Yes movement, they don't realise it's just a part of it, and it's like, oh, this is the end for them, this is the end for the movement. I'm thinking, what one individual does or doesn't do, it's got very little impact on the big prize, which is getting independence.
Yes, exactly. I just hope he doesn't choose to release a book in the run-up to, you know, when it's such a critical moment in our time, because you didn't want everybody to end up squabbling or whatever. I don't think it'll come to that. He's worked too hard his entire life.
Have we talked about how the virus will impact on Indy?
The only impact is, in my opinion, that it's going to have is when we get independence, no if, it's just still when.
Yeah.
And quite rightly, it's no sidetracked us, we've just parked the brakes firmly. Seen a change on Facebook.
Yeah.
It's not just me moaning anymore that I've started to respond, but I'm liking it, because if they engage, that's the only way we can get our points across, if they engage with us. So I'm actually, it's that last election and the first part of this year was reminiscent of 2014 for me. It just had that same excitement, the same views from a broad range of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see people were coming over. This situation is definitely getting more people political, because now they're asking, why has the NHS not got the incubators? Why has the NHS... Oh, because of that vote that I didn't vote in. Oh, was that what that...
I tell you what has disappeared, though, completely from the discussion, and that's Brexit. It'll be interesting to see, because that we're still online to leave without a deal in December unless they postpone it. And Boris, the liar, has been adamant he's not postponing it, though that could well mean that he is going to postpone it. But we've still got that hurdle.
Yeah, but I think the EU's just sitting patiently waiting on Scotland, saying, right, now we need your help. I mean, I feel for what's happening down south for the people that didn't vote Tory. Mm. But at the end of the day, they voted the Tories in, no us.
Yeah, that's so, it.
I don't like to say reap what you sow, because that sounds mean, but that's what it is. Yous are getting the party yous voted for. So why can we not be run by the people we want to run us? We've got loads of polls going to be coming out shortly after this situation. And that'll be the best indication of how people...
No.
This is a crisis, an unprecedented crisis, and if this isn't making people think carefully about their futures, then I don't know what would, Fiona.
But the risk is, though, that what they do is they cling more to the status quo.
Everybody knows that the digital era is well and truly... It's saving a lot of people's mental health right now with this.
Yes, I can't imagine what this would have been like without a computer. You'd have been up the wall.
Exactly, yeah. So... Exponential growth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're learning about Facebook's algorithms is very similar to that. So it's quite exciting, because you'll know yourself, Facebook's usually boring during the week when everybody's at their work and away running the messages. But it's quite exciting. This is what I was saying to you about the vibes that I felt were similar to back in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were coming up to the campaign, everybody was talking mayor, everybody was getting their debate, and it felt like that this time again before this election and again the new.
Yeah.
But again, I think that is if you're gently pushing it, because I've read loads of academic articles about Facebook. I keep thinking, remember, Lorraine, the world's going to go back to normal soon. So just we need to make the most of the opportunity. Whatever, just like Nicola, whatever's thrown on her plate, she has to deal with. So we have to make the most of a bad situation, I guess.
Yeah, and just keep picking away at the differences that you can see. And if something looks better because of choices we're making, even though she's going to great pains to saying, look, this isn't the time to be scoring points. And it's not
We didn't need to do that.
Exactly, yeah. I think, if you score a few while you're at it.
You can see that, Hen. You're the First Minister, I respect you, now respect me, I'm away to my land. Because I've said before, every day's a campaign day.
Absolutely.
Very fortunate, I've got my own piper over the back, who plays Scotland the Brave as I stand on my balcony and survey Wallace's monument and have a wee peek over yonder towards the castle. When I say the universe, I know it's coming. This is just to make us bide your time.
Let us govern our nation wisely and fairly. Let each man and woman work with a will. And if we will flourish, secure in the knowledge that we reap our own harvest and ring our own till.
We've had over the weekend the story of the chief medical officer who has flouted her own instructions to us and has spent not one but two weekends at her holiday home in Fife. As far as we know, she didn't talk to anybody else. She hasn't infected anybody else. She's not infected herself. But it's unfathomably stupid for anyone to think that that was okay. And certainly somebody in her position, it does make you question her judgment, her common sense. I can't imagine why she thought that was okay. But the contrast between the way the press has treated her and the way the press has treated other higher profile figures who've done much worse things is really quite horrific. Up until she blotted her copybook, I would have said that the contrast was huge between the First Minister's daily updates, where you've had the same three women, Catherine Calderwood, Nicola Sturgeon and, of course, Jean Freedman, all three intelligent, calm, haven't managed to infect each other, managing also to give detailed and direct answers. And contrast that with the shambolic, shifty, ever-changing lineup from the Tories at Westminster, who are more like the Keystone Cops, flouting social distancing guidance that they themselves have just given on camera at Westminster, all in a huddle, and then, what do you know, managing to infect each other. And we've also got the heir to the throne, who dragged his entire household north and presumably suspecting, at least if not knowing, that he was infected, took them all up to rural Aberdeenshire, putting a strain on those services. Prince Charles hasn't been even questioned. His mother was on TV the other day. I didn't watch it, but did she apologise for her son's actions? Did she apologise for her other son's actions? We've now got Boris Johnson, who has lied and lied and lied and lied his entire career. He's lied his way through the Brexit vote. He's lied his way into Parliament. As he laughs about shaking hands with people with COVID-19, even though it then turns out he was lying about that too, because those people didn't exist in that hospital. He is now in hospital, taking up resources that somebody else is not going to be able to use. I bet that last gasp joke isn't sounding quite so funny in his own head right now. But contrast the response of the press to the Tories. It's very revealing now that we're getting these press conferences by video conference, because you get to see the question that the press ask, you get to see the tone in which they ask it, and you get to see the answer, and then you get to see what gets printed. And it is not showing the press in a good light. I'm not at all surprised that Catherine Calder has resigned. I don't know whose idea it was to put her on camera yesterday, but that was the modern-day equivalent of putting her in the stocks and letting baying villagers hurl rotting vegetables at her. It was public humiliation. It was horrible to watch. And regardless of the fact that she's done a stupid, inexplicable thing, in no way do I condone what she did. But I thought that that assault on her by the massed ranks of the press, mainly men, that was horrible. If that pile-on of questions had happened in any other work setting, and she'd resigned after, I think she would be looking at constructive dismissal claim, sort of institutional bullying, it was horrible. I think we've probably lost somebody whose scientific contribution, I'm sure, was very valuable. Obviously, the First Minister found it so. And it's not that long ago since Carolyn Flack, again, having made a mistake, having done something wrong, then found the press assault to be such that she killed herself. And I think watching the press conference yesterday, it gives you a little glimpse, and that was just probably about 20 minutes of questioning. You know, once the press turns its focus on you, decide to go for the kill, and people do die. Carolyn's words, be kind. There was nothing kind about that. And who's the loser? We are, the Scottish people, because yet again the press have got an excuse to get torn in, including, I noticed, The National. I don't know, guys, a couple of recent decisions that I'm not sure where you're coming from. If we're thinking about what kind of society we want to be when we come out the other side of this, I really think there are questions to be asked about what kind of press we want. And what a contrast to the soft, soap, fawning, mealy-mouthed that we get for the clowns at Westminster. I feel for the First Minister, I really do. There she is, she's got the future of a nation in her hands. She's responsible for our well-being in the face of the greatest threat to public health this century. And she's repeatedly being let down by her own side. Derek Mackay, Catherine Calderwood, Alex Salmond, her civil servants around her. The fact that she's still standing in the midst of all this, I think, is testament to what a remarkable woman she is. And at the end of the day, it would be so good if we could just stop scoring own goals. Anyway, that's it for this week. This is Andrew Gordon from the Declaration of Arbroath celebrations. We'll catch you all next time. Bye now.
Scotland will flourish by the sweat of our labour, the strength of our will and the force of our minds. Forget the old battles, those days are over.
hatred corrupts and friendships refine. Let the Scots be a nation that's proud of their heritage. We are eyed in a future and a heart to forget. And let us be rid of those bigots and fools who will not let Scotland live and let live. Let us govern our nation wisely and fairly. Let each man and woman work with a will. And England will flourish, secure in the knowledge that we reap our own harvest and bring our own till. And let us be known for our kind hospitality. A hand is openly offered to friends. Our hard-working people, proud and unbending, Scotland will thrive throughout in the end. Scotland will flourish by the sweat of our labour, the strength of our will and the force of our mind. Forget the old battles, those days are over. Hatred corrupts and friendships refine. Let us be known for our kind hospitality. A hand is open.